Hey everyone, Raven here. Today, our guest is the respected Dr. Jamila Owens-Dodd. Jamila is a naturopathic doctor, chemist, plant medicine advocate, consultant, adjunct professor, and chief science officer of a cannabis company. Jamila also serves on the board of advisory for several cannabis organizations. She's presented on a global stage on topics such as neuroplasticity, neurological health, the endocannabinoid system, neuroprotective plants, and other overall medical cannabis topics. Jamila is committed to using science in order to provide practical, reliable, and accessible therapies to patients. So let's welcome Dr. Jamila Owens-Todd to the show, while she educates and provides insight into regaining our own innate healing power. Also, a quick disclaimer, while I make every effort to broadcast correct information, I myself am still learning. I promise to double-check all my facts, but I realize that plant medicine is a constantly changing science and art. So the views and opinions expressed on this show are intended purely for educational and informative purposes. No topics are intended to be construed as medical advice. Hello, Dr. Jamila Owens-Todd. Now, I know you from the Harrington Institute of Cannabis, where we both teach, but would you mind introducing yourself for the listeners?
Hey, I am Jamila Owens-Todd. I'm a naturopathic doctor. I'm an adjunct professor of cannabis science. And cannabis science and operations, specifically cannabis pharmacology. I do work as as the chief science officer.
Yeah, looking into your background, it looks like you do a little bit of everything. You sit on some boards, you consult, you are your general manager, you're going to be speaking at science conferences and stuff. And I feel like, maybe like myself, although we're doing a lot, there's just simply a lot to be done.
Yeah, there's a lot to be done. But, you know, it doesn't seem like I'm doing a lot of different things, because really the focus of everything I do is patient support and patient healing. So anything that furthers the opportunity for patients to have access to medicine, healthcare, alternative, integrative plant medicine, it's all in the same vein. So whether it's teaching it, whether it's practicing working with patients, whether it's making products, I find it all to be supporting that one mission. Kind of my purpose here on this planet, I think, is to support people in their kind of mission to heal.
Yeah, exactly. That resonates with me deeply. You were a practicing naturopathic doctor long before you were able to actually utilize THC and other types of cannabis in your practice. Can you speak a little bit on that and how found yourself there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did my training in Toronto, Ontario. And
oh, wow.
So in Canada, they were a lot more lax, even when it was not technically legal. There were patients, I had an oncology shift, and patients were using cannabis to support themselves with chemo and just overall treatment. And I heard of Rick Simpson oil. And so I started to learn about these things. And that was maybe back in 2003 or 2004. So I was very, you know, very familiar and understanding of how this is medicine. Again, to me, it was a plant. You know, I was all about throwing some plants at someone to help them heal. And so this was just one other plant. Unfortunately, this plant was complicated on a global level because of its, illegality. So it wasn't far off to think that this could be used. I will say I was happy to know that, you know, states started to legalize. Canada obviously was one of the earlier nations to legalize. So it helped to create access to healthcare. By being able to say, now, guess what? You don't have to go meet the guy in the back of the Walmart parking lot.
Yeah, for real. It's an incredibly powerful tool that you're now is in your tool belt.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious, what's the curriculum like for a naturopathic doctor path as opposed to a traditional PCP or something similar?
Yeah, cool question. So it is a four-year degree program. You do have to have an undergraduate degree in order to enter into the program. There is an exam. So a traditional medical doctor will do an MCAT. There's an NCAT for naturopathic doctors. So it's a four-year degree study where you look into pharmacology, you study microbiology. I mean, it's a very thorough, in-depth anatomy physiology. We were in the cadaver labs and doing, you know, dissections of aortic valves. And so you really do dive into the medicine. What happens with the shift is when it comes to application and treatment, you still know that, you know, carvedilol is used for congestive heart failure. However, you then find the alternatives that are more plant-based or nutritional, diet-focused, and even, you know, traditional Chinese medicine with acupuncture. So we take that basic science that's taught in medical school. We learn that And then we learn the ways to apply alternative therapies to those conditions or treatments or to the basic science. So it's, you know, we can argue that we get a little bit extra education compared to a traditional doctor when it comes to treatment, because we have to know the pharmacology, the drugs that are in rotation, in addition to the herbs, because the herbs can have some drug interaction. And so that's a huge part. It's like, I don't want to just throw a bunch of herbs at people and not consider their health concern, not consider their current pharmaceutical list of, you know, meds that they've been prescribed. That all goes into consideration. So to complete the program, you do have to have clinical. So you do two board exams, your end of second year board exam. And then once you complete it, you complete a board exam, which is pretty rigorous. And then you have a year of clinical. So you're in a clinic and you go through different types of clinics to operate. So that was the beauty, because I was able to work in a clinic for HIV, AIDS, patients who were diagnosed with HIV, AIDS. And I worked in a Native Anishinaabe clinic, which was really empowering, because you had the traditional healers who were really the last say. So even though we came in and there was, you know, dentists and physical therapists, it came down to that elder giving us the okay on treatment. So I really loved that approach, that connection to kind of ancient medicine. And I worked in addiction clinics. So seeing patients transition off of opioids and knowing at that time they were using things like cannabis, but we couldn't really, you know, it was like, yeah, we kind of wink and like, yeah, keep it going. But we weren't doling out any kind of, you know, THC products.
Yeah, understandable. It sounds like the curriculum to become a naturopathic doctor, that, like you said, there's an argument there definitely for there's actually more education, you know? And it sounds like you had diverse clinical background, diverse being able to do a diverse residency and understand all the different aspects of care, but be able to look at it from an alternative point of view. And like you said, so many things need to be considered. And with states where cannabis isn't necessarily legal yet, it's always important for the doctor to consider that their patient still is using it, even if they're not saying it. And the legality kind of creates that difficulty to facilitate that conversation. So that's what you're saying there is definitely powerful stuff.
Yeah. And you know, patients come in and they need help. You know, they're coming in. I feel like we all have the ability to heal. I speak on that very often. But as a healer, meaning healing myself, I have to know when I need to reach out to my chiropractor or when I need to get a prescription. You know, this bacterial infection isn't leaving. I need to get an antibiotic. I think that's the marriage of the two, understanding and listening to my body, but knowing when to seek out those resources. So it is very unfortunate when a patient goes to a doctor and they're saying, hey, I've been using cannabis to reduce my anxiety, and they're dismissed, or they discuss how psilocybin has totally eradicated their depressive disorder, and they're dismissed. And it's like you cut off a leg of healing when your person that you go to, your practitioner, can't even understand that this is a form of healing for you. So I wanted to be a practitioner who was open to all things. And that was what led me into naturopathic medicine.
Absolutely. That makes sense. Curious, we often hear that in traditional medical school environments, the curriculum is outstandingly lacking whenever it comes to like the endocannabinoid system and things like that. Did you find that your curriculum was pretty in detail about that?
No. So interestingly enough, we did not talk about the endocannabinoid system. But here's the thing. When you're going into whether it's a medical or a naturopathic medical program, you're learning about the brain. The understanding of an endocannabinoid system isn't a far off concept for a practitioner. So I understand where we are now. There's this kind of novelty, like everyone's learning about the ECS and this is like the bee's knees, right? But if you understand brain functionality, how receptors act, learning of another receptor is really easy to add into your current education.
I see.
And I do want to say this. I mean, we hear about, you know, medical doctors, you know, they're lacking in endocannabinoid education. I get that, but at the same time, they have a huge toolkit. You know, there are certain things that a medical doctor can help us with that the average, you know, let's say non-medical practitioner would not be able to. So them learning or not learning about the endocannabinoid system doesn't necessarily negate their presence. And I'm not suggesting you're saying that, but I do hear that a lot. It's like, oh, they don't know about the endocannabinoid system. I'm like, well, if they know, you know, we have these types of receptors and they know we got T-coupling proteins, and then that's good. You know, we're in a good good start here. They can learn a little bit more because they'll learn about the nicotine and opioid receptors, but are they diving in depth on how they're interacting with specifics? That may not be the case, but the understanding and the education still provides room for expansion of that.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I appreciate you saying that because that is something we do hear often is that doctors don't necessarily receive a thorough education. But like you said, they do receive a very, very deep education in the actual bodily functions and how receptors work. And with that, all doctors are, continuing their own education and learning
Exactly.
constantly themselves. So with that, they can fill in the blanks of how the endocannabinoid system works in order to really complete that gap in patient care.
Yeah, and that's why continuing education is so important for a practitioner. I have to do continuing education because I've learned a lot of information, but there's so much new development that's coming out, new processes, new approaches that you have to continue to learn to then apply that to that base knowledge that you have. So having, ECS continuing ed is definitely necessary. And I think we should consider it like that. Adding that into the already hefty medical curriculum, I think is, it's a bit of a reach, but I get it. I get where we would want that to be present.
That's usually the big pushback that people have said is that the medical curriculum is already jam-packed. Trying to
It
fit
is.
anything in there is going to require something else to be removed, and that doesn't do any more justice for humans right now. So like something like continuing education might be a great idea.
Yeah, and just to give you an example, so we have two local medical schools, and I've taught one class in each medical school about alternative medicine. Now, just to put this in perspective, the doctors may have had, 14, it's like 24 or something, I can't remember the number, elective hours. There's the 3-hour elective on alternative medicine, which is obviously lacking and very minimal. There's the 3-hour elective on, learning about acupuncture and Chinese medicine. Then there might be 6-hour electives on oncology, cancer support. So here's the reality as a new intern, if I'm going into a traditional medical, environment, into a hospital, I'm going to do those oncology, shifts because I might necessarily use that more in my next course of study or in my residency more so than the alternative. So sometimes it's a choice of practicality. It's not, I don't want to learn about this. It's like, I need to get out of med school. So those electives are, so again, not to take up for all MDs because everyone's different, but I think sometimes when you're in the midst of it, I just hear them get lambasted so often about not having this education. Like I see the, when you're choosing your elective classes, like I chose a lot of botanical medicine, that was my focus. But then as I became a professional, a lot of my continuing ed moved into autoimmune conditions, neurological health. And not do I not know about the heart as much? No, I still have that, but it's just the focus because that emerging science has been so evolving.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Hopefully, that puts a lot of listeners at ease whenever they go to talk to their doctor about the endocannabinoid system or their particular use of plant medicine. Hopefully, that helps them a lot. Another question I kind of wanted to ask while you were telling your story of how you got involved with plant medicine, did you have any like mentors or anything during this time that you looked up to that kind of guided you along this path or anything?
Interestingly enough, when I first started to, let me even go back further, I grew up in a household where if you were sick, it was like, what do we do? Let's go to the kitchen. My mom was famous for her honey and lemon cocktail that if you had a cough or a cold. And some of that is, cultural. I think about just growing up. I mean, historically, there's just kind of this long kind of history of, Black people not being accepted or not going to certain hospitals. So you had to be very innovative in how to care for yourself in your own home. So a lot of that comes from that. A lot of it comes from, ancient teachings that were passed down through oral traditions of this is what we do to heal. And this is that root, that's that herb, that's that plant. My grandmother grew up, a farm, 20 children in very, very, very rural Mississippi. And they grew everything, they had hogs, they had, chickens and a field of every plant you can possibly imagine, and herbs and vegetables. So when you got sick, it was like go out and pull that root up, boil it, drink it. So some of that has just been historical and kind of in my DNA. And so when I think about, I didn't realize that someone asked, like, when was the first time you used plant medicine? I was like, ugh, if I had a tummy ache, my mom was giving me peppermint tea.
Right.
I
Yeah.
didn't get Pepto-Bismol, you know. It's so I think about some of that is just kind of inherent in how I was raised. And then there was, you know, meeting people along the way. So I'll say this, you know, my background is a chemist, and as a chemist, I worked in the pharmaceutical industry, which, you know, I enjoyed that as much as I could, you know. But when I switched and went into naturopathic medicine, I started meeting like all of these ancient kind of healers and, you know, a traditional Ghanaian, you know, healer, you know, traditional native Canadian healers who never stepped foot in a school, you know, but they had a wisdom, a knowing that was deep. Those people I just, you know, I resonated with and thought there was so much to learn. So I've always valued that very kind of natural kind of, you know, ancestral knowledge that to me is what we're all trying to mimic as scientists. We're trying to tap into what our ancestors did when they just went out and perused the field and knew what to pick. And then we're going into a lab and we're, you know, deducing and trying to find the active ingredient, et cetera. So I think some of that, when you ask, I've been fortunate enough to meet and be around so many, what I would call just like real healers. But then I've had people along the way, you know, that were practitioners or just gave me insight. When I was young, and as I was kind of exploring this before even going to school for chemistry, I used to carry a book by Dr. Leila Africa. And Dr. Africa was known as a naturopathic doctor. And I just thought, you know, this man has so much wisdom, and I still have that book to this day. But that was like my starting point of kind of self-healing and really introducing just traditional methodologies. In a formal way, I would say, because he wrote a book, you know, it's like he has a book, so he wants to, you know. So that was, you know, one of the people I would say that really was like my early, in addition to my grandmother and my mother, you know.
Wow, yeah. In that case, I mean, I love that the inspiration there is not only your family, but also the indigenous roots and the real native healers. And I got to say, I feel like I'm talking to a real true healer here now as well. But like what
Oh,
you said, it's
wow.
absolutely true that the ancient knowledge they have, our science is trying to like circumvent it and get around
Yes.
to it and figure out how to synthesize and patent those particular cures and
Exactly.
stuff. So
Yeah.
it's very nice to see that your school and the curriculum actually honored those indigenous roots and gave it that stamp of approval. That's awesome.
Yeah, and it was refreshing to see, and there was this kind of duality, right? As we have many things in the world like that, where you had these very corporate, like I'm going to wear a suit and jacket to the, you know, lab to the practice and be very professional. And then you had this other, you know, healer came in with Birkenstocks and a tie-dye shirt, you know, and just places his hand on your, you know, chest and says, okay, there's some heat, that's inflammation. Like, I love that. And I like the marriage of the both, you know, because I think there is a place for them both. But to be honest, there's something to be spoken to when people tap so deeply into the earth to understand that we're all kind of committed to the earth, we're part of it, we come from it, we are investing in it, and as the earth breathes, we breathe. And so there is that healing of just doing nothing and just being that, you know, sometimes you don't have to prescribe anything. It's just let's just be in this moment and then find what the body is telling us and listen and move forward from there.
Wow, yeah. I often wonder what if doctors were to prescribe something like, I know this sounds off the wall, but were to prescribe a daily walk in the woods
They
before
did.
medication, you
But
know?
listen, the original, but I have some old like textbooks, medical books from like 1880 and 19. The prescriptions were walking barefoot in the dewy field. Like that was medicine. And then we got to the 1930s, you know, invention of the American Medical Association. We had the depression and monetizing and pharmaceutical, you know, and things shifted where it's like now we got to make money. You know, we can't tell people go walk in a field. But that was original medicine. This is why you see those old, you know, apothecary books of like cannabis in the jar, because this was equal medicine to everything else. So taking care of yourself, affirmations, telling yourself your body is healing is medicine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with that more. That's one thing I find really beautiful with kind of how we're opening up, how cannabis is kind of opening up what we see with the medical paradigm in America. And it's
Yes.
really making us think more holistically, more naturally. And I
Yes.
think that a lot of the time, as humans, we first off want to distinguish ourselves from animals, which is silly. And then we want to take that distinction further and distinguish ourselves from nature, which is even sillier.
And that's I always joke, like, the whole being in cannabis, and people say, "You're in the cannabis industry." I'm like, "No, I'm not." I'm in the plant medicine advocacy booth, because my thought is, the more people are looking into cannabis and unraveling the medicine of psilocybin and these different plants, it's like, well, what about chamomile and lemon balm? Like, can these plants also get their, day in the sunlight? Can they get their, awards and notoriety? It's like, it's not just these few plants that you can make a lot of money off of and that actually can help, but there are hundreds of plants out here that day to day, I mean, go to your cupboard, it's full of medicine. You got cardamom, you got, cinnamon, you get, like, all of these things are medicine. So my deep, dark hopes, Raven, is that we'll look at this cannabis plant, we'll look at mushrooms, we'll look at these plants and say, maybe there are plants that may not produce this effect, but they produce some other healing effects. That's my hope.
I'm right there with you. Now, that kind of puts me on to my next question. I know that like we love cannabis, we work with it, but what are some of your other favorite medicinal plants you've worked with in the past, and what are some of the most beneficial ones you've seen in your practice?
Okay, so I could go on, but I'll try to keep this short.
By all means.
One of my favorite herbs is dandelion.
Oh,
And
interesting.
it's so funny that people are every year trying to kill it because it pops up in the spring and it's hard
You're the only person I've heard call it an herb. I'll say that.
Exactly. And Eeyore said weeds are flowers too if you just listen to them, right?
Yep.
So dandelion is so profound in so many levels, because it has a bitter quality to it, and I won't go too in depth, but there's something about the bitter quality that the liver loves. The liver loves bitter. So you have products called bitters, but bitters help to stimulate gut and digestion, which means it helps with enzyme production. The more enzymes, the more you digest your food. As a naturopath, we always say, when people say you are what you eat, we say you are what you absorb. You can eat the best diet, but if your body's not absorbing it. So when you have herbs like liver, it's helping with assimilation, gut assimilation. Everything is in the gut. Everything starts in the gut. Your neurological function, your mood, hormones, immune function, like that, the source, the root is the gut. And so dandelion is one of those herbs that has been so effective in liver and kidney healing and support, digestive balancing. It is great for reproductive health and just trying to get things back on track. I find it in the spring. I do eat the greens. They're very bitter, so I'll mix them in with some romaine for a little bit of balance. But
I'm
even,
stealing that recipe.
yeah, but I steep it as a tea. And as a tea, it can just be so soothing and just kind of regulatory. Just a wonderful, wonderful plant.
Interesting. Yeah, I've never really heard of the medicinal benefits of dandelion before, so that's incredibly interesting to me.
I got one more.
Oh, please.
Garlic. So I'll tell you why I like garlic, because I don't know if you remember, there was a point when they were selling garlic tabs for heart health and lowering blood pressure and lowering blood pressure and cholesterol. And so what happened was, you had these people that said, okay, garlic is helpful for this. Let's go find the key ingredient. So they did an extraction and they found that allicin, Allicin, was the key ingredient that was having that blood thinning, blood pressure lowering, cardiovascular support component, right? So then these products, they shifted from selling garlic capsules to selling just the allicin. Well, the allicin didn't work as well as the garlic. So now they're back, like, scratching their heads, right? Like, wait a minute. We took out the really key ingredient that shows all of this. Well, what you find is some plants, and cannabis is one of those plants, where you have this key ingredient, but you have all of these ancillary molecules that really make it a whole plant. The whole plant is the medicine, not the extract. And so what they found was, in order to get those benefits back, they had to add the full crushed garlic bulb back in with the allicin to now get the blood thinning and blood supportive components, our cardiovascular supportive components. And I feel like that's just garlic's way of like sticking it to the man, saying, you can't separate my parts out. You got to use me all or none. Garlic is great for blood thinning, but it's one of the best antivirals, antifungal, antiseptic, antibacterial herbs that we have. And so my winter regimen, I just take a few cloves. I take the bulb, crack it open, peel some of those cloves, and I'll chop them. And I'll swallow just two to three cloves whole. Well, they chopped up. One of the best immune things you could do. Very helpful. Knocks stuff out. And it also gets rid of vampires. So.
Yeah, exactly. That's the best part. Wow, that's really interesting as well. To just know that there's kind of the entourage effect happening in like other plants is absolutely beautiful. And that's another way that cannabis is kind of peeling the can open to make everyone realize that there's a lot more than just the silver bullet approach to medicine, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And that's why, you know, when people talked about the entourage effect, I'm like, that's every plant. That's every plant. You know, you can isolate, but then you get a different molecule when you're using the plant in its entirety. Absolutely. This is not, independent to the cannabis family. It's all plants.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And you mentioned psilocybin earlier, and that's a question I always pose, is that maybe we need to look at it as a whole mushroom as opposed to just psilocybin, because I'm sure there's other enzymes, there's other molecules in there that are exhibiting an effect on that psychoactive effect. I mean, yeah. I know a lot of the clinical trials, they might use either dried mushrooms or even just like isolated psilocybin, but I just think there needs to be a more looking into that. Hopefully in 5 to 10 years, we can dive into the entourage effect of what's going on there, too.
Yeah, I mean, we can start with the medicinal mushrooms, reishi, maitake, ganoderma. They're all known to have this large amount of beta-glucan. Beta-glucan, which can act as a fiber, is found in oatmeal, actually. But it is one of the best immune-modulating components that you can find, prominent through all mushrooms. So even though we're looking at psilocybin, it still has that beta-glucan molecule. And so you're right, if we're taking that whole dry mushroom, how is this effect of the psilocybin being amplified, or is it being subdued? For some people, if it's too, you know, intense, you have that full plant hit chemistry to help. I feel like there's a concept in Chinese medicine. You hear about food combining, right? And food combining, it's like you're eating your protein with the greens to maximize your absorption, keeping carbs away. So in Chinese medicine, their theory of food combining is you throw it all in the pot and you cook it. And while those plants are in the pot, they work it out. And when they get into your body, they create a relationship, and what your body needs, your body extracts. So I think deep down, I love that whole concept, right? Because it kind of
It's more than just all the chemicals in the plants, all the plants and all the chemicals together.
Yes, yes. And it's the negotiation that your body has with this plant, because now that's nature. You know, nature meeting nature and having an organized conversation, right? So like, how are you going to use it? So I think about that. It's like, I may not need, you know, the THC from this cannabis. I might need more of the CBN at this moment, and how my body creates the relational kind of conversation to say, this is what I need in this moment. And then there's the trusting the process. So yes, yeah. I think that's all happening without us knowing it.
That's the most beautiful part. And, you know, even with years of schooling and stuff, we're trying to get to the bottom of it, but it's all happening and just nature doing what it's going to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's awesome. And I'm curious, as you kind of moved into teaching and as an adjunct professor, I'm curious what kind of enrichment that's done for you and your practice and how you've been able to incorporate the lessons you've learned from your students there.
Yeah, you know, the course I teach it's in cannabis business and operation. So it's approaching the plant from a very business kind of concept, and which, you know, I value, right? It does help me in practice with patients, because I can sometimes get a little in the deep end of what this plant could do for you. But then there is the business of a plant, right? There is, how is this packaged? Is it a tincture, a liquid form, or is it a capsule? And so now I'm having to think about compliance with the patient. You know, will a patient be more compliant with a very horrible tasting herb tincture that they have to take versus a capsule that's easy, but the dosing may be different, you know? So it does allow me to really consider it all. I mean, no one wants to be called a capitalist nowadays, right? But businesses exist for many reasons. So having a kind of a low level business thought process around administering plants. Like, I don't want to do anything that's going to be too costly. So I do think, I don't want to say here, you're going to need this, 100 milligrams of THC per day. And it's like, that's expensive. So I may say, let's do 5 milligrams and add in lemon balm, which is significantly cheaper than chamomile, than cannabis, and then chamomile even cheaper than lemon balm. So now it does make me think about compliance and, what's affordable. And again, approaching it from a business standpoint, because that's where the patients are coming in. They want to learn like the best information to make the best product and to be able to sell to customers. And I'm like, I get that. I don't want to knock that. But at the same time, it serves a purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that like being able to substitute something a little bit more cost effective, like chamomile or something that's more aimed at the relief they're getting. I've actually seen some cannabis companies, like hemp companies, introduce like tea bags that might have CBD with chamomile or with vanilla.
Absolutely.
And stuff like that. And I've yet to try them, but I'm sure they're very promising. I can't wait.
Yeah, I have some teas now that have a blend of like lavender chamomile, which to me makes sense because if you're looking for a cannabis strain that has high linalool terpene, add in some lavender flower, which is going to also have linalool terpene. So I think it's a smart way to, I'm really a fan of this and I'm kind of pushing for this right now with the company that I'm with is how do we use all plants? And because there is a synergy that's created when you mix plants together. People for years have been, smoking spliffs where they may do tobacco and cannabis. What if you did, cannabis and lavender flower? And what's the benefit? And that's I've tried it a few times. It's like, this is actually pretty decent. I typically, not to give all my little, what I do, but I typically do add in CBD flower, CBG flower.
I'm a big proponent of CBD flower. Huge
yeah.
Proponent.
I usually mix it in with my THCs just because I like the effect. I like how I feel afterwards. And so I'm always doing some kind of one-to-one. So adding in a few, crushed leaves of lavender to me just heightens the experience.
I might have to try that next time.
Yeah, a little bit of lavender. So it's like a fifth lavender, just crush it. It's a very small amount. It just gives a little extra kind of oomph. And then if you ever use those dry herb vaporizers.
That's what I was going to ask, if it's better smoked or vaporized.
That's an age old argument, right? It's like the most.
Right, yeah.
I want the fire. I don't want to step on
that. We'll dedicate another episode.
I know. But I have used the vaporizer and I added in lavender. So it's like to heighten the flavor profile, you can add in the terpene or. And so if you didn't want to necessarily vaporize the herb, I don't want to give a name drop, but Da Vinci has one with like a little flavor portal in it, which I think is the coolest little thing. And I typically either do lavender or chamomile flowers that I'll add in there just for that extra kind of, I feel fancy when I do that.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. I definitely want to try that.
Yeah.
Because one thing I think a lot about is whenever we talk about I know a lot of people, regardless of their tolerance, if they can be a regular smoker, a regular user, whatever the case may be, edibles can still put them on the ground, even at a medium, moderate dose. And I find that it's because it's just THC distillate, and you're not getting any additional plant chemicals with it. So you're not getting a full, well-rounded, whole plant experience. You're just, it's like drinking moonshine or Everclear or something.
Yeah, I mean, you're 1,000% on. I mean, especially if you're buying it from a dispensary, right? Because it's going to be distillate. If there's some culinary folks out there who are making the butters and, I prefer if it is, and I'm not a big fan of edibles, but if it is, I like the chocolate because there's that extra cannabinoid you get with,
Exactly.
And, theobroma cacao. I mean, the cacao plant in itself holds so many antioxidants, nutrients, where it just really assimilates the cannabis in so much more easily than a gummy. In my opinion, but not to, I don't want any hate mail. So
you're fine. I'm
going on my gummy rant. I don't think sugar should be added in medicine, but what do I know? So
you're only a doctor,
I'm not a fan of gummies. So you have that. You're right. Distillate is just like pure THC. But then we have that whole metabolism in the gut where it turns into no longer delta 9, it's delta 11, delta 11 hydroxy. Which now has this heightened, elongated effect, which isn't necessarily a bad effect. It's just, is that what I'm going for?
Exactly. I think in certain cases, it's really nice.
In certain cases, it's nice. So it's all about how it's put together. What, again, I love it in a chocolate. I think that's a, but you know, that's my preference, right? Someone else is like, I love a good vegan, you know, pectin-based gummy. So I think it's just also personal preference. But you're absolutely right. That pure distillate, I mean, I've done extractions. It's, you know, it is an isolate. I know there's that kind of debate. So you're seeing now in the market the kind of, you know, rosin that's coming out, which, I mean, to be honest, they're hard to make edibles with because of the taste component, because the, so industry business, distillate is the way you go because you can get that pure level, you get that good, you know, certificate of analysis with that 92%, like all the checks from a business side. But then we think about consumer ability. You know, is it really meeting where our consumers are? And then you got consumers who are like, I need 100 milligrams a day. I need it in this form. This is the easiest way to deliver it. So I get that as well. But, you know, so I don't want to you know, discard the need and the use of distillate. But I do think if you are, if you have the ability to get the flour, get you one of those butter machines or oil machine, add it in some olive oil. It just, you know, to me, I prefer that. So I make a honey. Like an infused honey for home, and I'll do a whipped honey. Easy to do with distillate, but man, when I add in, do my coconut oil, and you know, you have to siphon off the oil and all. It's like extra steps, but it feels just so much more like a food, plant medicine. When the distillate is there, it gets the job done. Don't get me wrong, but it's more medicinal,
Yeah, and it's fine. It's easy to overdo for a lot of people.
and it is. It's very easy to overdo. And again, like you said, someone could just be a regular consumer and they get this 10 milligram gummy and it's like, what did I just have? You know? And again, that synergy, when you're adding stuff together, you get this heightened kind of effect. So now we see gummies that have, you know, flavored terpenes being added to it. We know terpenes can amplify the effect of that high. And so there are a lot of things to consider. Is sugar a carrier? Is it carrying it deeper into the bloodstream? Like, how am I? Does my processing of sugar differ from yours? I mean, there are so many factors you have to consider when these added ingredients are present.
Yeah, definitely. And that's where it gets difficult because we all have, you know, our own particular body chemistry and our own physiology. And then certain plants can be, because they're biological entities and their organisms can be very varied as well. So it definitely gets difficult. But I think that leans back to what you said about the natural processes in our gut extracting what we need. I think that's really profound, truthfully.
And so if I'm only needing, you know, 9.5 milligrams of THC and I get a gummy that's, you know, because of its excipients, it feels more like 11 milligram, you know,
Oh,
that
yeah.
1.5 milligram or more could really be a thing that puts you over for
Oh,
sure.
absolutely. With that said, I kind of don't mean for it to be a loaded question, but I definitely want to get your insight on it. What's something everybody in your industry, the plant medicine industry, what do you think there's something they should all just stop doing?
I think they should stop expecting quick results.
Yeah, heard that. Heard that.
Because that's, you know, that's the same with, you know, cannabis. Like we like to have the conversation with you, 'cause you inhale, you feel it faster. I get it. I get when you have major anxiety and you need it to stop now. I don't, you know, that's a real thing. But I think if we are considering plants as they truly are, they work in their own time. You know, they work with your body, they work as needed. And so I really dislike this kind of one pill approach to plant medicine. It doesn't work like that. You know, if I need turmeric, I'm sprinkling it on my, you know, chana masala. I'm adding it to, you know, many different things. I might have a golden tea latte. And it's the cumulative effect of those herbs being introduced in a regular way. So plant medicine is a lifestyle. It's not a quick fix. It's not a get me over this point. Now let's be real. I mean, if you, I worked with a lot of patients during the COVID and they didn't want to do that and the doctors didn't have solutions. So I was recommending very high dosages of herbs and vitamins and seeing success. So I don't want to say that it can't be used in that way, but that's also not a sustainable model. You're not going to take a high dose of an herb for extended lengths of time. But if you're having a tea every night and you're sprinkling some of this on your food, or you're making a tincture and taking a little bit, That's the sustainable, long-standing approach that then overturns a health imbalance, that really gets to the root, because the root of the issue isn't the deficiency of the herb. It's whatever the issue is. The herb is coming to help you unravel the issue so that you can focus on the root. And to be really honest, the root medicine is all, how do I say this nicely, has a psychological component, psycho-emotional component, right? So if I'm unraveling the symptom and not dealing with the emotional attachment to it, I'm not healing. So if I think about healing, it is mind, body, it's emotion. You know, where am I jumping into my past traumas, into my fear, to the anxiety, to the all the things that compound an illness? And so plants are great allies when it comes to our health and helping us unravel, creating a space, because I can't think clearly if I'm in pain. But if I'm doing things to reduce the pain, now I can think about, well, where did this pain come from? And not only that, what's exacerbating the pain? You know, is it the pain from the car accident, or is it from the fear of now driving on highways because of the car accident? You know, it's like there's so many things and layers to that complicate healing, that if we allow ourselves to slowly peel them back in due time, we'll get to the root of that healing. We are truly onions, you know, and just layered in so many ways. So I think about the conversations about plant medicine being very, what do we do now? How do we fix it? What? And I'm like, yeah, cannabis is great for pain. But then, well, where's the root of the pain? Is this an inflammatory condition? Is it a metabolic issue? Is it a bone, you know, structural? Like, let's now peel away the pain so we can really think about how to heal.
Yeah, as I'm having more and more conversations with, you know, people that are more involved with plant medicine, that seems to be a common theme that keeps coming up, is that plant medicine is really opening a portal to true healing, really working your way through physical or emotional or mental trauma and actually paving the way for healing as opposed to bandaging over the symptoms. And
yes,
it really seems that's, I can't stress enough, that's come up on this podcast at least four times, like the true healing aspect of them.
I mean, it's so interesting because I've talked to people with, you know, chronic migraines, and we do this and here's a plant, here's an herb, and the migraines starting to go away. And then it's like, I haven't had migraines in 3 months, and then one came on today. And I'm like, well, okay, let's talk about what happened today. Well, nothing. I did my normal stuff. And it's like, okay, well, let's walk through the day. You know, I went to work, and I got on the phone call with my sister. And then, you know, I got off the phone, and then my headache came. I'm like, wait, so the phone call with your sister, headache came 20 minutes after that? What's your relationship with your sister? And it's like, wait, what does this have to do with migraines? Like, everything. And it's like, oh, we have a traumatic history and past. And whenever we're on the phone, she brings up the past. You know, so there's just, but if it becomes so much of your norm, you don't look at it as a pathology, because it's your norm. You know, we live in this kind of, I say mundaneness in a good way, because we are creatures of habit, and that's how many of us are surviving, right? What's my ritual? What's my habit? And so that mundaneness sometimes is saving us, right? So I know my limits. I know what I am capable of. So when we get to that point, it's like, now we need to work on that. Maybe here are some resources for you, or some counselors, or some therapists. Like, I know where I can help you get to. And then it's, again, as a practitioner, I spend most of my time referring, because now there's some deeper work that needs to be done, and you need a team. You need a support. And I think we all do. I need a team. I have a chiropractor. I have an acupuncturist. I have a therapist. Like, all of these people just to help me maneuver throughout the day, you know. But I look at it as a collective, because that's why we're here. We're a collective, and a collective thought can breed collectivism and support in a community sense. So if I'm willing to tap into that, I'm willing to heal.
Exactly. I think that interconnectedness and that community of support is where the real healing's done. And it's just so nice that plants can be our teacher into that way.
Yeah, and they do. I mean, if we look superficially with cannabis, and like it's been a social kind of, you know, herb, and people, that still creates a connectedness. And it creates a community. So I don't knock any aspect of it, you know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm right there with you.
Yeah. So it's like all of that is important.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming on today.
Oh
I
no, our
definitely
time
want to
is up.
be
What?
I want to be respectful of your time, but I also want to ask, you mentioned that you're going to be speaking at the Cannabis Science Conference in Baltimore next week,
Yes, I
and
am.
then also the Black Canna Conference in November.
Yes.
I'd love to fill the listeners in on that and hear a little bit about that myself.
Yeah, I'm really excited about the Cannabis Science Conference. They have two, one East and one West. The West is in Portland, typically, and I believe the East is always in Baltimore. So I'll be at the Baltimore conference, and I'll be speaking on how cannabis can support women's health. And I get into some of the reproductive, I get into like the neurological pattern. Again, it's like if we start in one place, we find that there's so many kind of roots. And so there is the hypothalamus response. I won't dive into it so much, but there is a key component and link of the endocannabinoid system with so there's the hypothalamus pituitary reproductive. So those, or the components in the brain, they speak to the glands in the body, and there's a very direct communication from the brain to gonads or reproductive health. And the endocannabinoid system is engaged in that communication. Again, learned about this, right? Learned about this, they call it the HPT axis or hypothalamus pituitary thyroid. There's the hypothalamus pituitary adrenal, all the different glands. So you learn about these ways that the body communicates from the brain to the rest of the organs, the hormonal component. Now we're finding the science that shows how the endocannabinoid system has always been involved in that communication. And, so engaging it. So that's really exciting to kind of pull all of that together. So that's what I'll be discussing in Baltimore, the Cannabis Science Conference. And the Black Canna Conference, I'll be discussing more of that just generalized neurology and how the neurological component, how that brain engages. So we're dealing with the women's health, specifically with reproductive. And then I'll back it up a little bit and talk about just how the endocannabinoid system is really having a say in every component of neurological functionality. So I'm always excited to have those conversations.
Yeah, that sounds like it'd be not only be exciting, but it'd also be really enlightening. So definitely, I wish I could tune into those.
Well, I think I'll have them recorded or something. You have
Okay,
to
good,
figure all
good.
that out.
With that said, you also have some educational videos being released at the turn of the year.
Yeah, so what has happened from these conferences that I've been speaking at over the last couple of years? I've had a few kind of people reach out saying, how do we package this? Like you said, how do you listen to this? So what I'm going to do is a series. There is one series that's specifically over terpenes and cannabis. Terpenes have been around for eons. We just now use them in the form of, how they apply to cannabis, but they are age old. One of my first chemistry extraction labs with this was essential oils. Essential oils or terpenes. And I talked about peppers and, cardamom, all rich sources of terpenes in your cupboards. So that'll be one. But then the courses are going to extend to plant medicine. And so we're going to get into some of the kind of the science, but not too sciencey. And what I mean by that is like I want you to know beta-glucan is and why it's important in a mushroom. But how is that applicable to the human body and how do I use it? So there will be some science breakdown and then some application. And so these will be more kind of developed as plant medicine courses for the average person and or practitioner. And so we understand that, drinking chamomile tea is important. Well, why? It does have beta-caryophyllene in it. And it has some other components that engage the body in a specific way that creates calm. That's anti-inflammatory, that helps with sleep. So it's giving a little bit of the why am I doing this? And then how do I properly use it and implement it in my life without causing havoc, So that's where those courses will be kind of focused on. So yes, a cannabis series, but the rest will be just kind of plant medicine.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely will be tuning in myself. So thank you for doing the good work for plant medicine. And thank you again for coming on the show. Where can people find you and where can people kind of look forward to these classes coming out?
So it'll be released on my website, which is Mint Health. Mint is in peppermint, MINT, that and the word health.org. I do have a social media, which I am horrible at. But one of my social media on Instagram is Jamila Likes Plants. So you can always follow me there but I'll be releasing this information on those platforms on my website primarily. I'll most likely do a newsletter, so there'll be an option to sign up if you want to learn more about the courses. That'll come probably next month in October. You'll check back in October, menthealth.org. There'll be an option to sign up for the courses. And then social media platforms. So Mint Health is also a site that I have, I think, on Instagram or Twitter.
No worries. I'm awful at all of it as well.
I can hear like the PR people like, well, you should know this. I'm like, I'm horrible with that. But I know that Jamila likes plants. So that's easy to not forget.
Perfect. Well, yeah. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Well, thank you, Raven. Hey, I want to say kudos to you for launching this podcast.
Oh, thank
and
you.
And all the work you're doing. You're doing some remarkable stuff on the education front. So happy to hear that and happy to be a part of your journey.
Thank you very much. I mean, I know that we've exchanged emails back and forth and everything, so it's been awesome to be able to speak with you for an extended period of time. The lessons and the insight that you bring is, like you said, the marriage of science and then ancient plant medicine. You represent it, so I think what you're doing is really awesome. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you. I'm your reflection. Thank you for doing what you do.
Okay, everyone, that's all we have for today. You can find Dr. Jamila Owens-Todd at her website, menthealth.org, or you can find her on Instagram at Jamila Likes Plants. But if you like this episode, please send it to someone who you know would enjoy it. We'd also be eternally grateful if you were to rate us 5 stars and follow us wherever it is you get your podcasts. For questions, comments, and community, head over to our official Instagram at plantsavemylife.pod. Until next time, everyone, have a beautiful week!